future all Black girls deserve.
And I would like for people to understand that we are not a threat. Okay, we're normal girls, okay? Like, I would like for people to understand the importance of our hair, our culture, our heritage, like, our skin color. Just understand us. Like, I would like for people to just understand who we are. And I think that would make a difference.
That is something that was recorded back in November of 2020 on a WQED in Pittsburgh, and the title of the piece is called "Childhood Loss: The Adultification of African American Girls." Across America and here in Pittsburgh, a disturbing trend is putting the future of African American girls at risk. It's called adultification. A perception that Black girls are more aggressive and less deserving of support and care. A perception that can also lead to negative outcomes and that takes them from the classroom to the courtroom. And they talked to various people in this special and that were challenging the systems and working for change. From WQED Pittsburgh, from November 21st, 2020 was when it was first posted online, so I wanted to share that with you folks. Thank you for listening today.
I just had another dizzy spell and almost fell. I'm scared they will get worse and never go away.
You're not alone. 69 million people suffer from dizziness and vertigo.
I wonder if there's help.
There is. The Vestibular Disorders Association has a helpline at 800-837-8428 or visit liferebalanced.org.
Can you repeat that?
800-837-8428 or liferebalanced.org.
Sponsored by the Vestibular Disorders Association.
Medicaid and CHIP offer free or low-cost health coverage for children and teens. Hospital and doctor visits, prescriptions, shots, and more are covered. That's peace of mind for parents if a child is sick or gets injured. And parents may now be eligible for Medicaid, too, even if they've applied in the past. Enrollment is always open. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Over the past few years, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected how we live our daily lives.
Today, one in five Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges, but many of us do not understand what we are facing or how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we work every day to eliminate stigma, combat mental illness and substance use disorders, and advance mental health.
If you or someone you love needs help, you are not alone. Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to...
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, one of many things wrong with corporate news media is the way they hammer home the idea that the current system is the only system. If you don't see yourself and your interests reflected in either of the two dominant political parties, well, the problem is you. Part of the value of independent media is that the people they listen to give us new questions to ask. For example, how do we acknowledge the fact that many people's opinions are shaped by messages that are created and paid for by people who work very hard to hide their identity and their interests? If we're in an open debate about what's best for all of us, why can't we see who pays you? We'll talk about dark money in politics with Steve Masick. He's professor and chair of communication and media studies at North Central College in Illinois, and his recent piece, Dark Money Uncovered, appeared on the progressive.org. That's coming up, but first, a quick look back at some recent press. Phil Donahue, a friend of FAIR and a rare champion of progressive issues on corporate airwaves, died on August 18th. FAIR founder Jeff Cohen was a senior producer of Donahue's MSNBC primetime show. Cohen recounts that while a lot of mainstream obituaries seem most interested in Donahue's daytime TV episodes that included male strippers or whatever, Donahue's most frequent guests on his daytime show were Ralph Nader, Gloria Steinem, and Jesse Jackson. He also regularly hosted Sidney Wolfe, warning of the harmful greed of the pharmaceutical industry. And while he was raised a Catholic, Donahue often featured advocates for atheism. But Donahue was on MSNBC in the run-up to the so-called War on Terror, when corporate media were awash in rampant warmongering. Liberal media hero Dan Rather told David Letterman at the time, "George Bush is the president. Wherever he wants me to line up, just tell me where." So NBC executives couldn't reconcile Donahue's platforming of anti-war activists or his insistence on asking difficult questions of D.C. decision makers, so they first mandated a thumb on the scales. As Jeff Cohen writes, quote, "If we had booked one guest who was anti-war, we needed to book two that were pro-war. If we had two guests on the left, we needed three on the right. When a producer suggested booking Michael Moore, known to oppose the pending Iraq war, she was told she'd need to book three right-wingers for political balance," close quote. And then 3 weeks before the Iraq war started and after some of the biggest anti-war mobilizations the world had ever seen, the network canceled Donahue's show. A leaked internal memo said Donahue represented, quote, "a difficult public face for NBC at a time of war," close quote. Now, after Donahue's death and more than 20 years after the New York Times got the story famously and catastrophically wrong about the Iraq War, the paper of record still can't forgive anyone who was right or even asking questions. As The Intercept's John Schwartz pointed out on X, formerly Twitter, anyone teaching a class on how to slime people in a subtle, scuzzy way in the New York Times could start with this paragraph from the paper's obituary. Quote, "In 2002, Mr. Donahue tried a comeback with a nightly talk show on MSNBC. Barely 6 months in, the program was canceled. He said later that network executives were unhappy with his fervent liberalism and his opposition to the looming war in Iraq. In 2007, he co-produced and co-directed an anti-war documentary, Body of War. It hardly helped that his ratings lacked far behind those of competitors on Fox News and CNN," close quote. Well, indeed, Donahue did say that executives were unhappy with his political stances and his opposition to the war. And you remember who else said that? NBC executives, as reported at the time by such hard-to-find outlets as CNN and the Washington Post. And indeed, Donahue's ratings did lag far behind those of competitors on Fox News and CNN. His show was also the top-rated show on MSNBC. But apparently today's New York Times can't be expected to convey that because, after all, it was reported at the time only in such publications as the New York Times. Phil Donahue worked to give major platforms to questions and to voices that corporate elite media didn't want to talk about or to hear from. And some things don't change. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group FAIR. If you use the word democracy unsarcastically, you likely think it has something to do with not only every person living in a society having some say in the laws and policies that govern them, but also the idea that everyone should be able to know what's going on besides voting that influences that critical decision making. Dark money, as it's called, has become, in practical terms, business as usual, but it still represents the opposite of that transparency, that ability for even the unpowerful to know what's happening, to know what's affecting the rules that govern our lives. A press corps concerned with defending democracy and not merely narrating the nightmare of crisis would be talking about that every day in every way. Our guest has written about the gap between what we need and what we get in terms of media. Steve Masick is professor and chair of communication and media studies at North Central College in Illinois, a co-coordinator of Project Censored's campus affiliate program, and co-editor and contributor to, most recently, Censorship, Digital Media, and the Global Crackdown on Freedom of Expression, out this year from Peter Lang. He joins us now by phone from Naperville, Illinois. Welcome to Counterspin, Steve Masick.
Thanks for having me, Janine. I'm a big fan of the show.
Well, thank you. Let's start with some definition. Dark money doesn't mean funding for candidates or campaigns I don't like or from groups I don't like. In your June piece for The Progressive, you spell out what it is and in terms of where it can come from and what we can know about it. Help us, if you would, understand just the rules around dark money.
Sure. So dark money, and I think Anna Massaglia of Open Secrets gave me, I think, a really nice, concise definition of dark money in the interview I did with her for this article. She called it funding from undisclosed sources that goes to influence political outcomes, such as elections. Now, thanks to the Supreme Court case in Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission in 2010 and some other cases, it is now completely legal for corporations and very wealthy individuals to spend unlimited amounts of money to influence the outcomes of elections. Not all of that independent expenditure on elections is dark money. Dark money is spending that comes from organizations that do not have to disclose their donors. One sort of organization I'm sure your listeners are really familiar with are super PACs, or what they're more technically known as IRS Code 527 organizations. It can take unlimited contributions and spend unlimited amounts on influencing elections, but they have to disclose the names of their donors. There is this other sort of organization, a 501c4 nonprofit, which is sometimes known as a social welfare nonprofit, who can raise huge amounts of money, but they do not have to disclose the names of their donors. But they are prevented from spending the majority of their budget on political activity, right, which means that a lot of these 501c4 organizations spend 49.999% right, of their budget attempting to influence the outcomes of elections, and the rest of it is spent on things like general political education or research that might in turn guide the creation of political ads and so on.
When we talk about influencing the outcome of elections, it's not that they are taking out an ad for or against a particular candidate. That doesn't have to be involved at all.
Right. So they can sometimes run issue ads. Sometimes these dark money groups, as long as they're working within the parameters of the law, will run ads for or against a particular candidate. But take, for example, Citizens for Sanity, the group that I talked about at the beginning of my progressive article. This is a group that nobody knows very much about. It showed up back in 2022 and ran $40 million worth of ads in four battleground states. Many of the ads were general ads attacking the Democrats for wanting to erase the border or for over kind of woke culture war themes. But they're spending $40+ million on ads, according to one estimate. What we do know is the officials of the group are almost identical to America First Legal, which was made up by former Trump administration officials. America First Legal was founded by Stephen Miller, that xenophobic former advisor and sometimes speechwriter to Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. No one really knows exactly who is funding this organization because it is a 501c4 social welfare nonprofit and so is not required by the IRS to disclose its donors. It has been running this year in Ohio and elsewhere a whole bunch of digital ads and putting up billboards, for example, attacking Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown for his stance on immigration policies, basically saying he wants to protect criminal illegals, and also just running these sort of general anti-woke, they're very snarky kind of anti-woke ads saying basically Democrats used to care about the middle class. Now they only care about race and gender and DEI.
Right. Well, I think rich people influence policy. It's almost like dog bites man at this point, right? You know, like, yeah, it's bad, but that's how the system works. And I think it's important to lift up, if it didn't matter for donors to obscure their support for this or that, well, then they wouldn't be trying to obscure it. And the thing you're writing about, these are down ballot issues where you might believe that Citizens for Sanity, in this case, any other organization, you might think of this as like a grassroots group that scrabbled together some money to take out ads. And so it is meaningful to know, to connect these financial dots.
Absolutely, it is meaningful. And since you made reference to down ballot races, one of the things that I think is so nefarious about dark money and these dark money organizations is that they are spending a lot on races for things like school board or, as I discussed in the article, state attorney general's races, right? There is this organization that was founded in 2014 called the Republican Attorney General's Association, or RAGA, which is a beautiful acronym. Hmm. And they have been trying to elect extremely reactionary Republicans to the top law enforcement position in state after state. And in 2022, they spent something like $8.9 million trying to defeat Democratic state attorney general's candidates in the 2022 election. Now, they are a PAC of a kind. They're a 527, so they have the same legal status as a super PAC. So they have to disclose their donors. But the fact is, one of the major donors is a group called the Concord Fund, which has given them $17 million. Concord Fund is a 501c4 that was founded by Leonard Leo, the judicial activist affiliated with the Federalist Society, who is basically Donald Trump's Supreme Court whisperer,
right,
who is largely responsible for the conservative takeover of the federal courts. His organization, this fund that he controls, gave $17 million to RAGA, and we have no idea who contributed that money to the fund. We can make some educated guesses, but nobody really knows who's funneling that money into trying to influence the election of the top law enforcement official in state after state around this country. That's alarming because, of course, some of these right-wing billionaires and corporations have a vested interest in who is sitting in that position, because if it comes to enforcement of antitrust laws or corruption laws, if they have a more friendly attorney general in that position, state attorney general in that position, it could mean millions of dollars for their bottom line.
And I think from the point of view of the public, filtered through the point of view of the press. If you heard there's this one, you know, mocker, this one rich person, and they're pulling the strings and they've bought this judge and they've paid for this policy and these ads, that would be one thing. But to have it filtered through a number of groups that are kind of opaque and you don't really know, a minority point of view can be presented as a sort of groundswell of grassroots support.
Exactly. It can create this sort of astroturfing effect, right, where, you know, oh, there are all these ads being run. It must be that there are lots of people who are really concerned or really opposed to this particular candidate, when in fact it could be a single billionaire who is routing money for a number of different shells and front groups in an effort to influence the outcome of an election. So, you know, I think attorney general's races are one kind of down ballot race where we've seen a lot of dark money spent. School board elections are another. And this is something that has been really evident in the past couple of years, where various different super PACs and other dark money groups have spent millions of dollars that are affiliated with advocates for charter schools and advocates for school vouchers, have been spending money trying to elect school board members that are pro-voucher and pro-charter school. In 2023, City Fund, which is a sort of national pro-charter school group, bankrolled in part by billionaire Reed Hastings, donated $1.75 million from its affiliated PAC to a 501c4, Denver Families for Public Schools, to try to elect three friendly pro-charter school candidates for the Skitty School Board, and all three of the candidates won. And I don't know about you, but I don't have children who went through the public school system here in Naperville. I didn't pay very close attention to who was running in those races or who was backing those people. I just would read about it like a couple days before the election. Mm-hmm. Most people don't pay very close attention unless they're employees of the school district or have children, you know, currently in school. They're not paying that close attention to the school board elections. And so this influx of dark money could very well have tipped those races in the favor of the pro-charter school.
And name that group again, because it didn't say charter schools.
So the group, the charter school group, was City Fund, and it donated money to Denver Families for Public Schools.
For public schools, yep.
Right, which is a 504 nonprofit. Yes, and it's got this sort of Orwellian name, because it's Denver Families for Public Schools, but what they wanted to do was, of course, create more charter schools.
It's deep, and it's designed to be confusing. It's confusing because it's designed to be confusing, and it's opaque because, you know, and then, okay, so here come media. And we know that lots of people, including reporters, still imagine the U.S. press corps is kind of like an old movie, you know, with press cards in their hat band, or you know, Woodward and Bernstein,
right,
connecting dots, holding the powerful to account, and the chips are just falling where they may. And you make the point in the Progressive piece that there has been excellent news media, corporate news media, you know, exposés of the influence of dark money, connecting those dots. But you write that news media have missed or minimized as many stories about dark money as they have covered. What are you getting at there?
I absolutely believe that. So it is true, as I say, that there have been some excellent reports about dark money. Here in Chicago, we had this reclusive billionaire industrialist, Barry Side, who made what was, most people say, is the largest political contribution in American history. He donated his company to a fund, Marble Freedom Fund, run by Leonard Leo, again, this conservative judicial activist. The Marble Freedom Fund sold the company for $1.6 billion. It's hard for the corporate media to ignore a political contribution of $1.6 billion. That's a $1.6 billion trust fund that Leonard Leo, who engineered the conservative takeover of the U.S. Supreme Court, is going to be able to use. He's a very right-wing conservative Catholic, to put his particular ideological stamp on American elections and on American culture. And so that got reported. And in fact, there have been some really excellent follow-up reports by ProPublica, among others, about how various Leonard Leo-affiliated organizations have influenced judicial appointments and have influenced judicial elections. So you have to give credit where credit's due. But the problem is that there are so many other cases where dark money is in play. Whether or not you can say it's determining the outcome of elections or not is another story. But where dark money is playing a role and it is simply not being talked about. Think about the last month of this current presidential election. There hasn't been much discussion about the influence of dark money, and yet Open Secrets just came out with an analysis where they say that contributions from dark money groups and shell organizations are outpacing all prior elections in this year and might surpass the $660 million in contributions from dark money sources that flooded the 2020 elections. So they're projecting that it could be as much as $1 billion. We haven't heard very much about this. I don't think necessarily dark money is going to make a huge difference one way or the other in the presidential race, but it certainly can make a difference in congressional races, attorney general's races, school board races, city council races. That's where it can make a huge difference. And I do know that Open Secrets, among others, have done research, and they found that there were cases where over 100 different congressional races, more money, there was more outside spending on those races than were spent by either of the candidates, which is a scandal that outside forces, in some cases, do not have to disclose the source of their funding, can spend more on a race than the candidates themselves.
And it's disheartening that the idea that, well, you're swimming in it, like it's too big of an issue to even lift out.
It is. And I think that's also part of the reason why it's sort of accepted, sort of like the weather. And I think that's part of the reason why there isn't as much reporting in the corporate media as there ought to be about legal struggles over the regulation of dark money.
That's exactly where I was going to lead you for a final question, just because that we know that reporters will say, well, they can't cover what isn't happening, but it is happening that legal and community and policy pushback on this influence is happening. And so finally, what should we know about that?
State-level Republican lawmakers and state legislatures across the country are pushing legislation that would prohibit state officials and agencies from collecting or disclosing information about donors to nonprofits, including donors to those 501c4 social welfare organizations that I spoke about that spend money on politics. So they're trying to pass laws to make dark money even darker, to make this obscure money influencing our elections even harder to track. And I will say there are Republicans in Congress who have introduced federal legislation that would do the same thing. Now, the bills that are being pushed through state legislatures, not probably going to be a surprise to anybody who follows this, are based on a model bill that was developed by the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, which is a policy development organization that is funded by the Koch network of right-wing foundations, millionaires, and billionaires. And they meet every year to develop model kind of right-wing libertarian legislation that then is dutifully introduced into state legislatures around the country. And since 2018, a number of states, including Alabama, Arizona, Iowa, Kansas, Mississippi, Missouri, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Utah, Virginia, and West Virginia, have all adopted some version of this ALEC legislation that criminalizes disclosing donors to nonprofits that engage in political activity. And in Arizona, where this conservative legislation was made into law, in 2022, there was a ballot referendum by the voters on the Voters' Right to Know Act, Proposition 2011, that would basically reverse the ALEC attempt to criminalize the disclosure of the names of donors. It would require PACs spending at least $50,000 on statewide campaigns to disclose all donors who have given more than $5,000, a direct reversal of the ALEC-inspired law. Conservative dark money groups spent a lot of money trying to defeat this, and yet they lost. And then they spent a lot of money challenging the new law in court, Proposition 2011 in court, And it has gone to trial, I think, three times and been defeated each time. Now, the initial battle over Proposition 211 was covered to some degree in the corporate media. The New York Times, Jane Meyer in The New Yorker, who does excellent reporting on dark money issues, discussed it. But since then, we have gotten very little coverage of the court battles that continue to this day over this attempt to bring more transparency to campaign spending in the state of Arizona.
So just to not to hammer it too hard home, but there are legal efforts, policy efforts around the country to bring more transparency, to explode this idea of dark money, to connect the dots, and more media coverage of them would actually have an amplifying effect on that very transparency.
Absolutely right. You would think that media organizations, whether they're corporate media or independent media, would have kind of a vested interest in seeing more transparency, right? In election spending. That would benefit their own reporting and the reporters, and yet they really haven't done a great job of covering it.
We've been speaking with Steve Masek. He's professor and chair of communication and media studies at North Central College in Illinois, a co-coordinator of Project Censored's campus affiliate program. The piece we're talking about, Dark Money Uncovered, can be found at theprogressive.org. Steve Masek, thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Oh, it was great. Thank you for having me.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. You can find more information about us on our website, fair.org. The show's engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
My heart, and I need to lie down. saw Betty Lyon, says, what are you doing here? Staggerly, that bad man staggerly. Now Betty Lyon says, staggerly, please don't take my life. I got a half dozen little children and one sweet loving wife. They're looking for their papa to come home. I'm a Stetson hat and I'm gonna take your life. He was bad, that bad man staggerly. Now Billy Lyon said, Mother, great God, don't weep nor cry. Billy Lyon said, Mother, I'm bound to die. He was bad, that bad man staggerly.
I'd like to ask Merle to do some that fine finger picking he does on one of the old American ballads. This one, I really have no idea how old it is. It's one called The Banks of the Ohio. Where the waters flow on the bank.
Ohio. Returning home between 12 and 1, thinking, Lord, what a deed I've done. I'd killed the girl I love, you see, because she would not marry me. The very next day at 4:30, the sheriff walked right to my door. He says, young man, don't try to run. You'll pay for this awful crime you've done. Darling, say that you'll be mine. In our home we'll happy be, down beside where the waters flow, on the banks of the Ohio.
WRCT Pittsburgh. No one is as excited about flaming cheese as we are.
Ten years ago, on a cold, dark night, there was someone killed neath the town hall light. There were few at the scene, but they all agreed that the slayer who ran looked a lot like me. The judge said, son, what is your alibi? If you were somewhere else, then you won't have to die. I spoke not a word, though it meant my life, for I had been in the arms of my best friend's wife. She walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody knows but me. The scaffold's high and eternity near. She stood in the crowd and shed not a tear. But sometimes at night, when the cold wind moans in a long black veil, she cries o'er my bones. She walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail. Nobody knows, nobody sees, nobody knows but me. Nobody knows but me. Nobody knows but me.
I hit the road in a 52 Ford. A pack of matches and a postcard on the dashboard. The sun was set, the gas gauge was low, and it was time to go. I met the girl at a 2
house was hot and it smelled of sin. I guess when one life goes, another begins. Hey, now what you gonna do? Got a fiver in your pocket and a switchblade in your boot. Hey, now what you gonna say to make it go away? I found the city by the mark on the stand, studied it under the light of a hotel lamp. I found his work, I found their home. I waited until I knew she was alone. I didn't want the child to see light. I justified it with my pride. My mind was set that no one could know. The girl had to go. Pocket and a switchblade in your boot. Hey, now what you gonna say to make it go away? Hey, now what you gonna do? Got a fiver in your pocket and a switchblade in your boot. Hey, now what you gonna say to make it go away? Light stumbled in through a crack in the shades, reflected off of the edge of my blade. As I reached for the girl with the knife in my hand, I thought, I guess the kid deserves a chance. Then I came in as I started to go. My last intentions, how could he know? The blade sunk deep into my skin. I guess when one life goes, another begins.
Delia, oh Delia, Delia all my life. If I hadn't shot poor Delia, I'd have had her for my wife. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. I went up to Memphis and I met Delia there. Found her in her parlor and I tied her to her chair. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. She was low down and trifling, and she was cold and mean. Kind of evil make me want to grab my submachine. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. First time I shot her in the side. Hard to watch her suffer, but with the second shot she died. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. But jailer, oh jailer, jailer, I can't sleep, cause all around my bedside I hear the patter of Delia's feet. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. So if your woman's devilish, you can let her run, or you can bring her down and do her like Delia got done. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone. Delia's gone, one more round, Delia's gone.
Thank you. stand, somebody moan. She peeped through the keyhole in the door, spied Alvin in Thelma's arms. He's my man, and it's doing me wrong. Frankie called out to Albert, he pretended not to hear. If you don't come to the woman you love, gonna haul you out of here. Use my man, ain't you doing me wrong. Smoking gun as Alvin lay there dying. He was her man, but he done her wrong.
Feel bad. Ooh,
what happened in Memphis, Tennessee yesterday. You people, what happened in Memphis, Tennessee yesterday. Come along some mean old snappers, kid Dr. Luther King away. Well, Dr. Luther King marched in Selma, he marched in Mississippi too. But when he got in Memphis, Tennessee, boy, man, he would do it to you. Dr. Luther King was dead. Well, he died last night, boy. Oh, Lord, with a bullet in his head. Well, I saw Dr. Luther King when he went to motel trying to take some rest. That mean old snobber shot him dead to the neck. You, that Dr. Luther King was dead. Pink country, fly down plant and jet all over my head. I went to the graveyard. I peeped down Dr. Luther King's face. I said, sleep on Dr. Luther King. We're marching on the resurrection day. You, Dr. Luther King, were dead. Here we go, boy. Flying airplane jets all over my head. Sad word to say, great man.
Reach the eye.
So, if you're outside of our coverage area, remember, you can listen to WRCT online. Live streaming available at www.wrct.org. WRCT Pittsburgh. You have no excuse not to listen.
Is WRCT Pittsburgh.
She
Hello and welcome to Breakfast for Dinner. This is DJ Chris Wired. You just heard Chris Richards and the Subtractions with Half Asleep. Hope you are not asleep at all. I hope you're fully awake for this edition of the show. And I hope you stick around. But first, let's take care of a little business.
I just had another dizzy spell and almost fell. I'm scared they will get worse and never go away.
You're not alone. 69 million people suffer from dizziness and vertigo.
I wonder if there's help.
There is. The Vestibular Disorders Association has a helpline at 800-837-8428 or visit...